This is a CBC podcast.
I'm Elizabeth Hames, host of Slumtown, a new investigative podcast from CBC Edmonton.
The domino effect of even one house on a block can't be underestimated.
People were threatening people on a daily basis. I have never seen it this bad before. Overdosing almost daily.
It only takes one house.
If action is not taken, some residents will take it into their own hands.
To completely devastate a community. Download all 5 episodes at cbc.ca/slumtown.
Welcome to Maritime Noon. I'm Bob Murphy. On today's phone-in, is it time for a shorter work week?
It doesn't seem like you can keep getting paid more and work less. But I do think for some workers, they can choose to go the gig work route, which will be not perfect for everybody, but maybe we will work for some people. You're already seeing it.
Working to bring an end to the 5-day week. That's coming up on Maritime Noon. First, though, when we hear about zombies, we think about end-of-the-world fantasy movies, TV shows, graphic novels. So when a family researcher found a Second World War poem about zombies, he was surprised and a little confused. Why would his cousin, a soldier from New Brunswick, write a poem about fighting zombies? Why indeed? So he showed the poem to David Hughes, the regimental historian of the Royal New Brunswick Regiment, and David joins us on the line. Welcome to Maritime Noon.
Thank you.
So tell us about this gentleman who wrote the poem.
Well, the gentleman that wrote the poem is Lance Corporal Gerald DeMerchant. And he is a cousin of a good friend of mine, Norman DeMerchant. And Norman and I have been friends for some years. Norman is quite the avid family historian. And, you know, me being the unit historian for the Royal New Brunswick Regiment, this story about Gerald's poem was of interest to both of us. We recently came across a poem in one of Gerald's notebooks that he had with him during the war. And Norman had asked me to identify some badges and documents that his family was trying to, you know, track down exactly what they were, what they were looking at. And we came across this poem, and I maintain the unit's Facebook page for the Royal New Brunswick Regiment. So I did a story on Gerald's poem.
So tell us a little bit about what is mentioned in this poem.
Well, what it is, the poem's entitled Zombies. And zombies was a derogatory term used by, you know, soldiers and civilians, actually, during the war, referring to soldiers of the National Resources Mobilization Act. Now, these are soldiers that were conscripted for service, but only for the defense of Canada. Their terms of service didn't force them to fight overseas unless they volunteered for it. So this derogatory term came about because the term zombie, as you know, as in the kind of legendary zombies, neither living nor dead. So the way the voluntary soldiers looked at it was, you know, these guys were soldiers, but they weren't able to go overseas and fight, or they didn't want to go overseas and fight. So the term zombies came about because were they soldiers, were they not soldiers?
And the poem, I've just got a part of it right here, I'll read it just quickly. Now we've got them, 1,600, out to reinforce the line. We don't want them. We'd be happy if they left them all behind. If by chance we are so lucky as to safely reach the Rhine, we would rather fight the zombies than the Jerrys any time. Pretty harsh.
Yeah, pretty harsh, but I mean, you can try to put yourself in the shoes of Gerald in particular here. From what we can gather, the poem was written sometime after his brother Reed had been killed in action. His brother Reed was younger than him, and he was killed in August of 44. Gerald himself was still fighting in Italy at the time, and then he was wounded in Italy in December 44. So for a family like the DeMerchants, who was kind of giving so much and sacrificing so much to the war effort, there was 4 DeMerchant brothers that were serving at the time. 2 of them were killed in action, 2 of the 4. Gerald survived the war, and his brother Ralph survived. Ralph was serving in the RCAF. But you can imagine the attitude of the voluntary soldiers that were fighting up front and serving overseas to these, you know, so-called zombies who were reluctant to go overseas and fight.
Hmm.
So it is pretty harsh, but you can, you know, you can imagine the attitude of the people that were sacrificing so much towards the people that were reluctant to go and do their part at the front line.
And so as a historian, were you familiar with this term, zombies? Because as I say, it seems more like a modern day term.
No, I was familiar with it. There are other versions of this poem that I've seen before and other references to zombies. The term actually made it into a newspaper headline in Windsor, Ontario during the war. But that's why we're not exactly sure if Gerald wrote this poem himself or just, you know, saw another version of the poem or song and just adapted the words in his own way.
And so now that you have this poem, what are you doing with it? Is it on display?
Well, it's going to, the little notebook that it's in is going to remain with the DeMerchant family. You know, we could, I would certainly, you know, accept it as a donation to put in our museum for the unit if the DeMerchants were willing to give it over. But I've scanned a copy of the notebook, and we have the digital version of the pages of the poem. So, but the physical notebook, I think, is going to remain with the family.
Did you thumb through the other pages in the notebook and glean other insights into the way Gerald was thinking at the time?
I did. You know what? But the rest of the notebook, it's all pretty mundane stuff. There's a list of other soldiers that owed him money, I think from gambling debts, possibly. And just other kind of mundane stuff, a list of addresses of people that he would write letters to and things like that. But then this poem really kind of stood out as a, you know, right at the front of the notebook.
What sense did you get from the family of the importance of having something like this from Gerald?
Well, you know, I don't think the family until, you know, just the last few days was really aware. I think, like many people, they weren't really familiar with the term zombies in this context. And I think now, especially now that it's received this attention and they, you know, and looking back on the service and sacrifice of the DeMerchant family during the war, I think it's suddenly become a lot more important.
Well, we thank them for their service, and very interesting tale indeed. It makes you think twice about the term zombie and just how far back it goes.
Yes, for sure.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
David Hughes is the regimental historian of the Royal New Brunswick Regiment. Fifteen minutes after 12 o'clock.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving.
My baby takes the morning train. He works from 9 to 5, and then he takes another home again to find.
Everybody's working.
When it comes to work, the idea of working Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, is ingrained in our culture, even if we don't even work those hours. Well, today we are talking about the work week and why it's so hard to imagine a world where we work less. But there are many studies that show that working fewer hours can actually increase productivity. A New Zealand company tried out a 4-day week for the same pay and found that the work all got done and employees were far happier. So, is it time to rethink the traditional work week? Would working fewer hours actually make you a better employee? And while we're at it, should employers be letting more of us work from home when it suits us? We'd love to hear your thoughts on this today. Call 1-800-565-1940. The lines are open. Our email is marnoon@cbc.ca, and we're on Twitter at CBC Maritime Noon. My guest today is Linda Nazareth. She is an economist specializing in trends around the future of work. She's also the author of Work is Not a Place, Our Lives and Our Organizations in the Post-Jobs Economy. And she joins us from Toronto. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Thanks, Bob.
So why are we so wedded to the idea of a 40-hour work week Monday to Friday?
Well, I guess there's some comfort in the regularity of it. We know this is full-time work, 40 hours a week. But I think we forget that it was not always this way. It used to be a longer work week. And if you go back even further, it was just work whatever hours you can, because companies weren't really what was prevalent. People were working on their own, doing piecework, gig work, whatever you want to call it, or they were farmers working far more than 40 hours a week. But at some point, we established this norm. And questioning the norm is always an issue for people.
Hmm. And it's not like we haven't dabbled or organizations haven't dabbled in the truncated week, like a 4 or 3 day work week. It's just that it doesn't really seem to have caught on, I guess.
Companies have tried it. They've tried longer shifts and shorter days, tried some of the going home early in the afternoons on, you know, summer Fridays. I find whenever the economy goes down, all those experiments go away. And it becomes about showing up and being there as long as you can, showing, you know, the FaceTime thing. I do think we're at a point where we have to question this again, because FaceTime is not really as important as it was. We know you can work from anywhere at this point, not in every job, but in a lot of jobs. And so maybe it's a good time to question the work week as well.
And for a lot of people, and maybe a lot of employers, the crux of this issue is the whole question around productivity. And as I just suggested there, there is some evidence, quite a bit of evidence actually, that says shorter work weeks or fewer hours in the week actually boosts productivity.
That's true, and studies have shown that. You mentioned the New Zealand experiment with that. There was, I believe, an experiment with the Reykjavik government in Iceland saying, you know, they looked at it for a year, cut about half a workday every week for full-time employees, and said, look, cost and productivity were the same. Sweden has tried this. Japan has this measure called Shining Mondays, where companies can give employees the opportunity to come into work late one Monday. So, you know, there's been experiments around the world, but I think it's a hard sell in North America. I don't know about you, Bob, but I don't think a lot of companies want to hear, you know what, I'm just going to take every Friday off. It'll all be the same.
So how much, can you talk a little bit more about the productivity factor, though? You know, in those studies, generally, how much of an increase in productivity or holding that ground is there?
They all tend to show that productivity does stay the same and the work gets done. I'm sure there are those who would quibble with that and say, look, if they were there one more day, productivity could be higher. However, you also have to maybe factor in people's attitude. And that's, you know, kind of a hard one. What does it mean when people are happy? Do they work more? Are they in a better mood? Do they give more to the company? I think there's something to that. Employee engagement, I guess, is the buzz phrase in human resources. And I think if you get to the point where employees are engaged, you do get your productivity higher. And that's what those studies are showing.
Let's talk about automation and computers. You talked there just very briefly about how FaceTime is just not as important are always necessary, I guess, compared to years ago. We were supposed to be, were we not working less once automation and computers came along in full force?
I believe that was something from the 60s. And I've actually heard about it a little bit lately, that some of these jobs are going to be replaced. There will not be enough work for everyone. We should get used to doing less. The problem here is we're not going to get used to living on less. That would be a very hard adjustment for North America, I think, to say, oh, yeah, I can have a simple life and I will just drive my car less. I will eat out less. I will shop less. You know, I don't think it's realistic. And of course, real estate prices being what they are, it's not really really that possible for people to pay that less on housing. So it's it was a nice concept, but people can't give up the extra day of work. Now, it would be nice if the robot could do the work on the fifth day and the employer would just hand over the worth of that work to people, but it doesn't tend to work that way, right? Mm. There is an issue with employees capturing the extra productivity from automation, and it's something we're going to tussle with for quite a while.
And isn't it also true that with all of us walking around with these devices in our hands, that we're actually working off the clock in many cases? So we're in the evenings or early mornings before we show up, supposedly, for that day's work.
And that's true, but I don't really have as much of a problem with that, I think, as some people. Possibly because I've been self-employed a long time, and I prefer that. I don't think you really do it between 9 to 5 and that's it. I understand if you're paid as an employee, you may resent that you have to check your emails at night, and it can get way out of hand, and it has gotten way out of hand in many companies. But I don't think we're going to put that back in the box. Once you make it possible for people to be contacted all the time, it's not going away. However, you know, I do understand this. I'll give you an example. A few years ago, I was working as a professor. I decided to teach a couple of courses. Somebody asked me to try it. And I found it was so different than when I went through university. We used to have, you know, office hours where you'd go see the professor. In this case, people were emailing me all the time, and they expected answers all the time. It was like you're at dinner on Friday and somebody couldn't understand something. You know, they wanted to be able to get a hold of you. It's like, well, this is different.
How did you feel about that?
I didn't care for it. Yeah, but, you know, it's what it is, you know, and it brings up something else, that ratings, and it's a little off topic, but not quite, that part of this new workforce is you get rated on your performance. And I think if you didn't answer quick enough, people would be pretty quick to say, I don't really care for her. And I think it's much the same in the workplace, too. If you're not that available, yes, there could be a penalty.
Mm. All right. Well, even in Halifax, and I'm sure lots of other municipalities look at this as well, city employees looking at the whole idea of switching the actual hours. So moving away from that 9-to-5 structure, which, again, not everybody has, but a lot of people do, to either having some of those people coming in earlier or have them coming in later or, you know, working remotely from home, all in the name of reducing traffic congestion.
And I think that's a wonderful idea. Particularly in bigger cities, you know, Halifax, sure, but Toronto, Vancouver, Los Angeles, you're basically creating a holiday weekend every day by saying everyone has to go to work at 9. You have more accidents, you damage your highways more, you create more environmental damage, you have more deaths, actually, because of the accidents. I don't know that there's a real reason to make everybody come at the same time. Sure, you want to have some overlap in a lot of offices, but there's a lot to be said for staggered work hours.
And what about from the municipality or the province's view? You don't have to build as big a highways, potentially, if everybody's not traveling on those highways at the same time?
Potentially, or at least you don't have to repair them as often,
yes.
Which is a major thing in many cities.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about the work week, and curious to hear what our listeners are doing vis-a-vis work and whether things have changed much over the years. Our guest is Linda Nazareth, who is an economist who specializes in trends around the future of work. She's also the author of Work Is Not a Place, Our Lives and Our Organizations in the Post-Jobs Economy. The number is 1-800-565-1940. You can also send us an email at marnoon@cbc.ca. But let's go to the phone lines first. Tom DeMarco is calling from the Chesedcook area. Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Good. What's your work week look like?
Pretty open at the moment. Just a question for your expert there. For those off hours working, like, and shorter work week, is the salary going to go up correspondingly, and are they going to be classified as full-time employees with shorter hours in the work week? So, if you go from 40-hour work week to a 30-hour work week, are you not going to be classified as part-time? And is any of the legislation will ever change to reflect it, like for your benefits and that?
Interesting question. Several questions there. First of all, in the experiments we talked about, those employees were considered full-time employees. So in New Zealand, I guess, when they took away Friday work, they still got paid the same. However, I think it's kind of a hard thing for North American companies to get their minds around. If you say you're going from 40 hours a week to 30 hours a week and you're going to do the same amount of work, I don't know that they would be really open to that. At least at this point. Maybe at some point in the future, but right now I don't think that's much of a discussion. So I think there's two issues. Do you want, are companies going to be open to discussing shorter work weeks with less pay, which is, you know, perhaps something some people want if you have young kids or other responsibilities. That's perhaps something maybe should be open for discussion. Does everyone have to work full time? And second, if we do have this productivity effect where we can get more done in less time, can we say that the work week isn't 40 hours anymore? I would like to think that that's something that will happen in future. I have to say I'm pretty unconvinced. And in terms of the legislation takes a long time to catch up with realities. Right now, we don't even have legislation that would give people who are working for themselves as somewhat self-employed maternity benefits, you know, parental leave at all. We really haven't caught up to the reality of how people work. So I think it'll be a long time before we say full-time work is anything but this 40 hours or 37 and a half hours. But, you know, it's interesting that we're opening the discussion. It may be less time than we think.
Tom, do you want to add to that at all?
Yeah. Based off of your study in that, is all the benefits towards the company itself and not to the employees and workers?
Well, in reality, I think that's what's happened, particularly in North America. When we have more productivity, has it really been shared with workers? Not too much. I mean, if we look at how wages have moved over the past decades, it does not seem that workers have really benefited in a big way from productivity increases. Maybe they've kept their jobs. In the studies where you had specific companies going after this, yes, it was shared with the employees because they got to cut their hours and they kept the same compensation. But up to now, I don't think we've seen it. And, you know, to be fair, it's a pretty competitive world. I don't think it's getting easier for North American companies. There's a lot more global competition. You have everything available on the internet if you're selling things. If you're in a market, you have a lot of companies coming in, different sizes, able to compete with you. So I think everybody feels they're struggling, and I don't know that the workers are really gaining anything here.
Yeah, but you don't have an economy without the workers.
I don't disagree, but if you're asking what the history has been, I have not seen the gains to workers. And if you're asking, do I see it shifting towards workers anytime soon? Not really. I think some workers will be at much more of an advantage. I do think as we, you know, move into this high-tech world, there'll be some skills very much in demand. Now, you see some employees now with very specialized skills in tech treated just like they're sports superstars. People are bidding for them, and we see the other end of it. So I think there's more of a polarization going on.
I agree.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Tom.
No problem.
1-800-565-1940 is the number to call. We're talking about the work week and how much it's changed or how little it's changed over the years, despite some efforts to make those changes, maybe shrink your work week or reduce the number of overall hours that you're working. The number to call again, 1-800-565-1940. You can email us, marnoon@cbc.ca. You can also reach out on Facebook, as some people have, including Lloyd, who says, I used to work in a lab where we were open 8 to 4. I wanted to change it up. I asked for 8 to 6, Monday to Thursday, and then have Fridays off. At first they said no. Then I said the lab was open 8 more hours Monday, which meant that made up for my time being off on Friday, and they eventually said yes. And he says he did it for 2 winters, and it was awesome. So I guess one possibility is try it, see how it works, and because each individual case is different, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's great that some smaller companies are perhaps more open to this, trying the experiments. Some larger ones are as well. I mean, we have seen different initiatives from large companies. Some of them are more open to the idea of working from home, and some aren't. I mean, we have the famous case of Yahoo, which for years allowed people to work from home. And then when, you know, the profits didn't look that great. So now everybody has to come back to work. That's how we're going to do it. And it kind of goes in fits and starts. I do think we have to make some kind of call on some of these things the next little while, because companies want the right labor, because commercial space is pretty expensive, and maybe it makes more sense for everyone not to be at the office at the same time. And it's a world in transition. I mean, you look at co-working spaces. They were not something we had very much of 20 years ago, but they're springing up all over the place because people are working from home, but they want to be together some of the time. And, you know, it's sort of a world in transition.
All right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation in just a few minutes and head back to the phone lines. But first, Sandy Smith has stepped in from the newsroom, and he has a look at the latest news headlines. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Bob. More than 50 people are homeless this afternoon after an apartment fire in Charlottetown. That building's been destroyed by fire. No one has been hurt, but the search for the cause is already underway. The Red Cross is working with the building's owners to find places for everyone to stay. All of the residents are described as seniors. Health officials in New Brunswick are warning people who swim in the St. John River not to drink too much of the river water because cyanobacteria has been found in the water. And police in Halifax have raided a cannabis compassion club in Dartmouth for the fourth time in the past year. Five people have been arrested just days after 13 people were arrested last week. All today's Maritime News in more detail at 1 o'clock, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Sandy. We are asking if it's time to reshape the work week for today's world. And with that in mind, let's head back to the phone lines. Glenn is calling from Sydney. Hi, Glenn.
Hi there.
Well, so what do you think? Is it time to reshape the work week?
I think so. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are finding innovative ways to be more productive, you know, to actually be more efficient. But unfortunately, I think most employers, they see that not necessarily as an opportunity to free up time for those employees. They see it as an opportunity to perhaps, you know, decrease their human resource load. So, for instance, you take an employee that might find ways of, you know, doing more throughout the week, and instead of rewarding that employee and, you know, maybe giving them a few hours off here and there, they say, well, hey, here's some extra work for you. Maybe you can add this to your roster as well.
What do you think of that, Linda? Is that a correlation that you've explored?
That when there's some free time, there's always things to fill it with.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it is. But, you know, it kind of ties into another trend, which is giving people as much vacation as they want. So maybe you don't change the work week, but you can say, look, you can take as much work, much time off as you'd like, as long as the work gets done. That's the Netflix model. And I don't know if you know much about this, but they said, we're not going to have a specific policy. We're not going to have 2 weeks off or 3 weeks off. You figure it out with your team. You figure it out with your supervisor, and you can be there or not be there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know that we've had a definitive study as to how much people actually are taking off, because I don't know that it's easy to say, well, you know what, it's all done. I am going to go home. You know, I think it's more like, well, we can do more. So it's perhaps a trap. But, you know, if the question is, are companies open to saying, well, it's all done, now you can go, I'm not sure they feel they can do that, that in this environment they feel everybody has to give more. Whether or not making everyone go give more all the time is ultimately productive.
So you think they have, you see lots of evidence where they see the long game here. Yeah, okay, you were very productive this week, you worked fewer hours and actually got all the work done with maybe even fewer people. But in the long term, that's not sustainable?
I believe so. And, you know, I think people do get rewarded for this. Those people who do more in less time are the ones who get the raises and the bonuses, and they're less likely to lose their jobs. And that's sort of been our gold standard. What else does anyone want? You know, don't we just want money? And I think that's a whole conversation. What would people pick? If you had to choose between 4 days at a certain amount of money, maybe even your current salary, or the 5 days with a raise, which one would you go for? And I think up to now, the consensus was, I need the money.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're changing it a little bit.
So, Glenn, is this, just to be clear, some lived experience with you then, that scenario that you talked about, a decrease of employees after productivity goes up because you're working perhaps a reduced week?
Yeah, I've seen this in several different positions over the last number of years that I've worked. And, you know, you'll have goals and targets, of course, which have to be met in terms of your productivity, if you're speaking about sales, for example. And it seems that, okay, maybe I can reach those goals in a three-day work week or a four-day work week. Once you reach those goals, it's never like, hey, great, good job. It's, okay, you've reached those goals in 4 days. Let's up the target now. Let's make sure that, you know, next week you're 20%, you know, higher in terms of productivity. I just don't see employers adopting to this four-day work week model, even if the productivity stays the same. I think they will always be striving for more.
All right. What sector were you in, Glenn, or are you in?
I've been in business-to-business sales and business-to-customer sales, both.
Okay. I was wondering about that, Linda, you know, in sales specifically. There are always targets, aren't there? And if you have a good run, typically those targets just get increased. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. That's sort of the culture of sales. Also, I think a lot of people in sales kind of want that, right? They strive for more all the time. It attracts that kind of person.
Well, if you're making a commission, I guess.
You're making a commission, right? Yeah. It's never enough kind of thing. And it does tend to work like that in sales, too. It's not like, well, I can make one sale a month and I'm good. Mm-hmm. The people who make sales are the ones who work all the time. And the ones who are striving for one sale a month aren't really doing very well at all, right? Mm. So it's a hard one to reform. But again, you know, it'll be interesting if that's what people want. Do they want somewhat less and more time off? I'm not sure, because North America has never gone that way.
All right, Glenn, just on the technology question, have you seen much change in your line of work when it comes to the work week and your use of technology?
Oh, definitely. You know, the people that use the technology, they certainly are more productive. You know, we've got customer management software like Salesforce, for example, you know, using Microsoft Excel spreadsheets, you know, more effectively. Anybody that can adopt the technology will certainly benefit. And you know what? You could really today be doing the work of two or three people that, you know, they would have done 5 or 10 or 15 years ago just by utilizing technology.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, Glenn. Appreciate very much your thoughts.
Okay.
All right, Linda, just to go back to that 40-hour-a-week model, it goes all the way back to the early 1800s, doesn't it, when that was kind of set in stone?
I think it was longer than 40 hours for many, many years. Even up to the 1950s in factories, the norm was to work Saturday mornings.
So yes, 6 days a week,
six
right.
6 days a week.
With one day off, yeah.
Yeah. So we've taken it down over time, certainly. And I think we've had legislation to control things like unpaid overtime, you know, successful or not. But we've tried to do that over the years. So the work week has gone down. You know, I was reading recently, Harvard Business Review had this article about doctors. The norm used to be in training, it was a 100-hour week. And that's been taken back to 80 hours.
And the reason there primarily is the fear of mistakes, wasn't it not?
Yes, the fear of mistakes. But now there's sort of this questioning of it, saying, well, you know what? If you're not working as many hours, you have more shifts where you leave a patient and you're not with them for perhaps enough time. So it's always something to weigh with that. I agree 100 hours a week sounds crazy to me. However, some would say, look, that's what we all did, and that's what was effective, and perhaps this isn't working. So, you know, different industries have different norms.
Mm. I remember now what I was thinking of. Robert Owen, who was a Welsh mill owner and labor rights activist, it was back in 1817 that he was saying 8 hours of labor, 8 hours of recreation, 8 hours of rest. But as you just said, it was a long time after that before most people were getting that balance.
Yeah, but don't forget, most people weren't necessarily working in offices or factories at that time. They were still farmers, right? It was not the norm for everyone to go to work at one place until maybe 100 years ago. And it's a shift, and we will have more shifts.
All right, 1-800-565-1940 is the number to call. We're talking about the work week. Maybe you're off enjoying a bit of a break during the summer, or maybe you're hard at it. But in any case, work never far from the minds of a lot of people. And so if you've got some thoughts on how the work week has been reshaped or not in your particular situation, we'd love to hear from you. Janet Brush sent an email who says, Parkinson's Law states that work expands to fill the time allotted. Years ago, I remember applying that law to someone who was lazy, who dragged out a simple task to avoid being assigned extra work if she finished too soon. The opposite can apply to a shorter work week. If a person can complete 5 days of work in 4 days, he or she will gladly do so in order to have an extra day off and be an overall happier employee. Parkinson's Law. Are you familiar with that?
I have not heard that term, but that sounds right. Having said that, I wonder how this applies to people who work for themselves. And like again, I count myself as one of them. I often do cram a lot of work into one day to get a long weekend, perhaps, or to finish off early. Sometimes that means getting up much earlier and doing it. Sometimes it just means being really focused. So it's a little bit different when somebody else is paying you for however many hours and when you're trying to juggle it yourself. So I'd be interested to hear other people's experiences with that.
Maybe some guilt enters into that equation too if you're not at work when typically you are on that day, even if you did work harder to get to that point.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit also about some of the things, because there have been numerous people questioned about this over the time, you know, about working and at what point does it become too much work and then the productivity drops down and issues like anxiety and depression and sleep problems and difficulty with concentration set in.
Yeah, well, China is a great example of this, where they have now a little bit of a protest against the number of hours required in tech companies, where it's endless, where people are getting depressed and anxious and sick and everything else. And, you know, it's sort of take it or leave it. 9-to-9 culture is, you know, what it is. And, the 9-9-6 schedule, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week. But, you know, this is happening as staff are being laid off, and in some companies, pay is stagnating, so people are not necessarily being given a choice around this, which is why I say a lot of this really depends on the economy. When the economy's good, you can probably put in reforms, you can probably change laws, you can probably change norms. When the economy is stagnating, which, you know, arguably it is a bit in China at the moment, it's hard to push back against whatever work hours the company says you're going to work.
Mm. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Deb is calling. She's from Vancouver. Apparently, are you Deb? But you're on holidays in the Maritimes?
We're having a wonderful time here.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. What are your thoughts on the work week, and is it time to perhaps reshape it given today's world?
Well, I just wanted to say I had the good fortune to work TELUS years ago, but we instituted a work from home program 2005. I had a team of about 450 people at the time.
Deb, you're just breaking up a little bit there. I heard you say that you worked with, I think it was TELUS, and 450 people. Are you still there? Oh, okay. We're having a little troubles with Deb. I'm not sure where she is in the Maritimes, but cell coverage, a bit of an issue there. So if we can get her back on the line, we will. Roy Francis on Twitter was writing, my wife flexes every other Friday. She is a full-time employee. She works longer hours the other 9 days to create the flexible time on the 10th and has been doing it for 10 years. I know, Linda, that's certainly a model in government, is it not?
Yes, different governments have tried this at different times, and you know, a lot of employees would say it's been a successful thing, and in the corporate sector to an extent. But I find in the corporate sector, it's sort of special deals for some employees, and it's never a whole department at a time, or in most cases, it is not.
Mm. And so, why do governments do it then? Why, I mean, is it a quid pro quo there? Do you think it's good for the government and the coffers, and also good for the employees? Is that
well? I guess it depends on the individual case. Are you talking about cases where they actually do cut back on pay and allow this?
Yeah, they work a little extra, like in the case that Roy just explained. There, you work 9 days, but you work a little longer hours for
right.
those 9 days, and then get that 10th day off.
Right, but they're not saving any money as a government.
Well, that's
right?
true. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Right,
but I don't know if they have to bring somebody in on that 10th day? I guess not. Probably not.
Sometimes governments are actually a little bit ahead of the private sector in trying these things out. Maybe not governments per se, but certainly the healthcare sector in a lot of places has been somewhat innovative in terms of having people on, maybe not shifts, but on contracts, or having people close to retirement work slightly different hours or shorter hours if that's what they want. And oftentimes it's taken as a success. Corporations who have quarterly results that they have to present can be a little bit more cautious.
All right, I think we've got Deb back on the line, who's vacationing in the Maritimes. Hi, Deb, are you still with us?
Hi, yes, I am. Sorry, we pulled over. What I wanted to say was that one of the things that we found at TELUS was actually our employee productivity improved with people working at home, and our employee retention improved significantly. Our what we called pulse check results, so employee satisfaction results, improved dramatically. And I think at the time I left TELUS 2 years ago, something like 70% of the employees in Canada were working from home.
We're working from home, and I think we've just lost Deb again. But so what do you think of that model, Linda? I mean, it sounds like she's putting forward the case that, in fact, it was very worthwhile.
And I've seen that again and again in Canada, in the U.S., and other countries. If you can let people choose some of their hours, work from home some of the time, they tend to be much happier, and it is easier to retain them. And I don't think we should forget that. The cost of hiring somebody is gigantic. You've got to look for them. You've got to interview them. You've got to train them. If you can just stop somebody from leaving, that's huge. So I think companies that are worried about having the best labor force, which should be everybody, needs to be open to this. Now, the problem is, in a lot of companies, there's still this concern that if I can't see this person, they could be home watching Netflix, and, you know, I'm not going to take that chance.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, is that because maybe in a lot of those cases, they have, in fact, been burned in the past? I mean, I don't know. Is it a legitimate concern?
I'm sure there are some people who would take advantage of it. I think for the most part, you can put in safeguards to make sure that that doesn't happen. A lot of times you have to be logged in, and you know, you can see whether somebody is actually on their computer and the like. And at the end of the day, it comes down to their productivity.
Yeah.
If they are getting it done, then you know, I guess you can live with them watching Netflix a little bit, which I don't think most people are.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phone lines again. I'm sorry, Deb, we lost you there again. But Suzanne Morin is calling from Halifax. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've been fortunate. I've been working in sales and marketing and event management for the majority of my life. I'm 54 now. And one of the things that I think I've negotiated over the years in my employment is the fact that I have that flexibility to work from home and work in the office. I'm a mature worker now, and I know what works for me, and I love my job. So I worked out this great relationship with people where I guarantee them that I'm going to give them more than they're probably giving me, but I have that flexibility, and I do work at night, and I do work, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, but I also have that time where I can leave and do something that I might have to do, and my employer is satisfied with what I do. It works. The only challenge, I think, is that in some workplaces, not everybody can do that. My job allows me to do that, so there's sometimes it's hard for people to see you have that flexibility and them not be able to have it also.
So in your particular case, Suzanne, how does that guarantee work? Because you said that you guarantee you give them more than they give you.
Yeah, I'm just working. I work longer hours. I'm not at all bitter about it because I have, you know, the flexibility to come and go as I want. But I just, if you love a job, it is hard to just kind of put it down. But I also have 3 children. So I want to make sure I can see a baseball game when I want to. And so if I do that, then I make sure that I work, you know, more on the other end after the baseball game. So, and I'm always there for, you know, if I have appointments or if I have something that I have to go into the office, I'm in there a lot too. But it's just that certain flexibility at my age and the skill set that I have, it's really important to me. It actually is more important to me than money. And I think that a lot of, you know, I'm being gender biased here, but I think a lot of women would agree that have children, if you have to have that flexibility. I don't want to fight with anybody about whether I can see my children do these milestones. So I will go to an employer that allows me to do that.
Okay. And in your line of work, you get that flexibility, but you can also very clearly show that the productivity is the same or higher as well?
Absolutely. I think, you know, again, it's a personality thing. You know, I'm in, you know, your guest is saying, I've always been in sales and marketing, so I'm always competing against others and competing against myself. So, I have no problem. I get the job done. And if I don't get the job done, then I know what the circumstances are. Mm. No, they're going to look for somebody else. So, it's something I think that I've acquired after many years of being in the workplace and being in this kind of job.
Linda, Suzanne raising another interesting point there as well, that flexibility more important than money.
Yes, and she also brought up the point that she's well into her career. And if she was 20, she might have a different answer. As we get older, we change perhaps our priorities, change our needs, and it may well be as we have an older workforce, we will have more people saying, I value flexibility over the money. And I say maybe because unfortunately we have a situation where baby boomers and Gen Xers perhaps still need the money very badly and they haven't saved enough for retirement, so may not be enough of a push there to change what people want as a group. But I agree with everything else she said. I agree that there are things you can do saying, look, I'm going to give you more than you ever expected, and what I'm going to take instead is I'm going to take a little bit of flexibility in my work, and that's okay.
Okay. Suzanne, it sounds like you're in a car, so we'll let you be on your way, but thank you very much for joining us today. We're going to move on now to Alex Zietenhoff, who is on the highway between Fredericton and St. John. Hi, Alex.
Hi there.
What do you think? Is it time to reshape the work week?
You know what? I think it is. My girlfriend and I both are freelancers who, late last year, we were both approached by different companies that wanted to take us on full-time, and we both accepted our jobs on the condition that rather than full-time, we could each only work 3 days a week. So we're permanent part-timers, and the rest of the days we have our freelance business or we relax. And honestly, it has been so much better than any time that I've had full-time, 5 days a week, 9-to-5 jobs. We're a lot less stressed. We've got a guarantee of money coming in from the 3 days a week and the variety the rest of the time to work on either passion projects or other gigs. And we're both much happier for it, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone that has that flexibility with their workplace.
And as far as the person paying you or the company paying you, they or it is happy?
Yeah, you know, they seem pretty happy as well. You need a back and forth with the employer. They need to know that you can do a good amount of work in the 3 days that you're in, and you need to trust that they're not going to be demanding more of you. And I think we both have pretty good relationships with our employers in that way.
Mm. And so have you been, a 9-to-5, Monday to Friday person at any point in your life?
Yes. Yeah, basically up until this year, I was always working the 9-to-5 or just entirely freelancing as gigs came in. And with the 9-to-5, like, obviously I liked the money and the knowledge that you've got a steady income, but I found even when I was doing work that was exactly what I wanted to be doing and that's work that normally is rewarding to me, I still always felt exhausted and stressed and sometimes even just resented the fact that I felt I was dedicating most of my life to a company rather than to myself. And this way I don't have those feelings anymore. I feel like I've got a pretty good work-life balance. So as long as I can, I'll hope to stick with that schedule.
Mm, there you go, Linda. Somebody that's changed it up.
That's great. I'd be interested to know what field Alex is in. I'm going to say tech or graphic design?
It's close. I do video and filmmaking.
Yes.
And my girlfriend's a writer. So for both of us, it works pretty well.
Yeah, and those are the fields where people are being more innovative and making it work. And I think that's great. I think we will see it in more fields. These ones are the ones that are perhaps easiest to adapt right now. Interesting that you're making this work money-wise. It's, I think, a Canadian thing, too, that we have a certain amount of benefits provided by government, healthcare, and other things. It would be much harder in the U.S. if you really need a full-time job to get those benefits.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're right. I think we do have advantages here that help us with this. We've always said, like, if we wanted to move, I don't know where else we could go that companies would agree to this. So luckily, right now in Fredericton, our employers are both working on it with us, and they seem to be happy, too.
Mm. That's great.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Alex.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's head over to Howard Brook in New Brunswick. Dwayne Clare is on the line. Hi, Dwayne.
How you doing?
Good. What do you think about the work week and whether or not it needs to be reshaped for today's world?
Well, I think it could be reshaped. I'm retired now, but I worked for a company in Ontario, and it evolved into, it was a trucking company that worked for a manufacturer. We did bulk food and consumer goods, and it was a 44-hour week, four 11-hour days is the way they worked it out. But what the great thing about it was, and they had, retention was not an issue with them, whereas with most trucking companies, they have 100%, as your guests will tell you, they have 100% turnover, almost every trucking company, but this company has zero problems. At the end of the month, you look at your hours, and every truck driver works more than 44 hours a week, and those accumulated hours, you had an option. You could bank them, and you could bank up to 5 weeks or 220 hours, or you could take them as overtime. Now, towards the end of your career, which I did, I took them all in cash, and that boosted my retirement pension. But if you're a young fellow or you had a farm, which I did, I would take the time off, and it's those 220 hours or 5 weeks would be at full pay. And like I said, it was a phenomenal job. We had zero turnover in drivers, and when they hired me, I competed with 150 other guys for the job. So it was just kind of a no-brainer. More trucking companies have to look at giving their drivers, you know, either more compensation or more time, home time. So, yeah. But anyway, that was my contribution to it. I mean, we had a 30-some benefits that came with the company as well, but couldn't say enough good about them.
Wow. Okay. Linda, sounds like a success story in an industry where, as Dwayne points out, the retention level is quite low, the turnover level quite high.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear somebody say such nice things about the company they work for. Fortunately, we don't hear that often enough. And absolutely, the trucking industry has a lot of problems. One is finding workers in some markets. Things are very tight in parts of North America. The other is keeping them. And oftentimes, it's also, you know, ensuring the quality they want, because they just have to keep hiring all the time. So yes, obviously, lots of room to adopt some of those ideas.
Mm. Yeah, well, there's so much room for improvement in the trucking business. But I notice how the industry works down here, and it's regulated by the top couple of companies, and all the rest of the guys have to toe the line with what they pay their employees, because that's just the way it is. You know, I've been in the business for 50 years, so I got a pretty good idea of what's going on, and it's unfortunate that the way it is in the Maritimes, but as I've said to the guys, you know, it's just the way it is down here. You have to suffer along with it.
Mm. All right. Well, thanks for calling, Dwayne.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And Linda, thank you very much, Dwayne. And Linda, thank you to you as well for joining us. This has been an interesting conversation, and we appreciate very much your time.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right. Linda Nazareth, who is the author of Work Is Not a Place, Our Lives and Our Organizations in the Post-Jobs Economy. And you can still have your say. If you would like to leave a message, do so at 1-800-565-5463. And our email is marnoon@cbc.ca. Tomorrow on the program, the need for a national cycling strategy. The federal NDP is pushing for this idea to fight climate change, to boost public health, and make cycling safer. Do you think Canada needs a national cycling strategy? Let us know Thursday, a Maritime Noon. Have a great day.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.